Hey everyone, welcome back to Veils of Fire on Spreaker.com. The topic for tonight is going to be the end times events and the alien disinformation campaign, what it's all leading toward, and why all of this is happening now. And again, I'm your host, Carrie, and joining me again is Tom Montauk.
So mainly, I want to talk about the future, what everything is really leading towards. So far, we have these trends that we read about in conspiracy books and websites and the news and so on. Things like the police state, the New World Order, 9/11 false flag attacks. You know about underground bases, the seed vaults that are in Norway, these concrete bunkers that are stocked with hundreds and thousands of seeds to restart civilization in the event of a major cataclysm. They finished that not too long ago. We have things like alien abductions. We have mind-controlled sleeper agents embedded in our society, ready to sabotage infrastructure if they're given the command. And we also have secret societies doing these really weird rituals, you know, like the Super Bowl and the Olympics and any sort of like mass event. They have these mass rituals that are stocked full of symbolisms indicating that they're expecting the birth of a new age of sorts. You know, it's kind of like the birth of the New World Order that they're trying to orchestrate. Now, you know, the big question is, why is all this stuff happening all within the past 50 to 100 years? It's not happening for no reason, obviously. It's all leading towards something huge. The alien agenda has been setting up the machinery for thousands of years, okay? They have orchestrated certain religions. They have manipulated political and scientific beliefs. They have set up all the different chess pieces, getting it ready for some point coming up in our imminent future where they are going to activate all these pieces and pretty much do what's called the end game. That's where everything that people are expecting could be played out. Okay, so what is it all ultimately coming to, and most importantly, why? Ultimately, you have this huge convergence of different cycles from different sources, be it astronomical, be it synchronistic, like, you know, what the Mayan calendar talks about. You also have like biblical prophecy, Scandinavian mythology concerning, you know, the end times apocalypse event that they call Ragnarok. Even the Zoroastrians, which is this really ancient religion out of the Middle East, the Persian area, they have this concept called the Fratio Caredi, and it's very similar to the idea of the Christian apocalypse or the Scandinavian Ragnarok, which, you know, it's the whole idea that the world will come to an end and that something supernatural will replace it. There's also things like the Hindu Yuga cycles. You know, like right now we are in what's called the Kali Yuga, which is the lowest point in this cosmic cycle, which some people have linked to the 26,000-year precession of Earth's equinox. In other words, Earth's pole, it wobbles on this really slow 26,000-year cycle. And some gurus have associated this with the idea that the energy levels on Earth, divine energy, it fluctuates up and down depending on the cycle. So that when the energy is really high, we have a golden age. And when it's really low, we are stuck in this really morally bankrupt type of civilization. So, you know, there's a lot of tension in the air. People are really subconsciously responding to something like animals sensing a storm coming. So, you know, there's a lot of people expecting great changes that could be happening in our near future. Things like collapse of our old way of life, the end of the world as we know it. And not the end of the world in totality, just a major, major, major change in our living conditions. Some have predicted mass insanity, people going crazy all over. Other sources have talked about the end of linear time as we know it, like time getting kind of glitchy and rubbery and kind of things not making as much sense as they used to. Volcanic, seismic, and solar upheavals, you know, the sun going nuts, you know, increased earthquake activity, something that we're definitely seeing right now.
Yeah, we're definitely seeing that right now.
Yep, so a lot of these things that have been predicted, they are starting to occur. You no longer have to be a fundamentalist Christian believing in end times events and the rapture and all that to know that something's going down. I mean, it doesn't matter where you turn. You know, you can totally ignore the Bible. You can go, you could study the whole alien research literature, right? Even the aliens themselves are saying that they're here because something big is coming up and they're trying to prepare people for it. But, you know, the flip side of that is that maybe they're just trying to hijack the outcome of whatever this chaotic period entails. And there's also been the whole idea of people having dreams of seeing alien sky battles. You know, the sky is just filled with ships.
I actually have those.
Oh, you've had some of those?
Yeah, I actually have those kinds of dreams. where there's UFOs in the sky during the day, and like it's completely normal.
Yeah, it's strange. I mean, I've had a couple of my own, and my girlfriend has had some, and pretty much majority of the people that I talk to that are into researching the alien subject, and some of them that don't even believe in aliens, they've had these dreams as well. And, you know, it's not like these dreams are purely symbolic. They seem rather realistic a lot of the times. So it's almost like they're getting a glimpse of either the way things are right now in the sky and we just can't see it, or they're getting a glimpse of the future where such things will become common. Okay, so the whole alien factor, that's a big part of the future. There's also the whole New World Order idea, the rise of the Antichrist. And, you know, if you progress even further in the future and what prophecies have said about it, there's the important factor of divine intervention, if it ever comes, the Christian idea of the second coming, which actually, you know what, I should mention, it's not even fully a Christian idea. It goes all the way back, like I said, to Zoroastrianism. Anyway, their version of the end times events is very close to what we know today about what the second coming might be, which is mainly this radical change in our consciousness where our mind transcends the ego and shifts into this higher mind, which is a lot more powerful than the lower mind that we're used to. And, you know, certain mystical avatars throughout history, a lot of them were almost like the trailblazers, being able to achieve this higher consciousness before most other people can. But now we are entering a time where this can happen to a lot more people. And that's one of the forms of divine intervention that can actually end up busting up the control system that we've had here for so long. Because right now, in our current state, being limited to our five physical senses and being stuck in linear time and, you know, just not being psychic at all, we are at a very serious disadvantage to the forces that we are up against.
Yeah. Etheric energy is not widely spoke about amongst the UFO and alien community. It's not a big topic, and it definitely needs to have more light shined on it. So I'm glad that we're talking about it right now, because I definitely want to learn more about it. So
yeah, you know, when I originally began researching the alien subject, I didn't know anything about it. Although funny enough, at the time I was doing a lot of experimentation and research into orgone energy, which is used for healing purposes and also for weather modification. Little did I know at the time how much this so-called orgone energy would later factor in to the whole alien agenda and what could be going on during the end times. So everything from the collapse of the old way of life to mass insanity to volcanic and seismic activity, a lot of it can be explained by etheric energy. But really what it is, you know, it's called various names. I mentioned orgone. It's also known as prana. In Eastern systems, it's called qi energy. So like qigong or feng shui, the way it manipulates energy. The energy that they're manipulating in these systems is etheric energy. The ancient Egyptians divided the human body into several different components, not only the physical, but also a couple non-physical layers to it. One of them was called ka, K-A. And what this ka was, it was like the life force energy body, which, you know, nowadays we know as the etheric body. What exactly then is etheric energy and why does it matter? Well, it matters because the level of etheric energy on Earth, it fluctuates over time. It's a cyclical kind of thing. And depending on how high it is or how low it is, all life on Earth, especially the human civilization, because it so much affects our consciousness and our vitality, these things go up and down in sync with that. So, you know, the rise and fall of civilizations, the degree to which humans are morally corrupt and spiritually blind or versus enlightened, a lot of it traces back to etheric energy.
Right, exactly. And in the research that I, just a little bit of research I did, the etheric energy, from what I understand, is our aura. And from what I read, that it keeps us connected with the world around us.
Right, yeah. You have to understand that our minds, the very core of our consciousness, is completely beyond space-time. It's something that's 100% metaphysical. And in order for it to interact with physical world, and that includes our bodies, our brains, our DNA, our neurons, and so on, it needs an in-between, an energetic interface through which it can then influence the material world, and through which the material world can in turn relay, you know, sense impressions back to the mind. So you have physicality on one hand, totally on one end of the spectrum, and then you have consciousness, which is on the other end of the spectrum. And those two things are a little bit too far apart in order for them to interact directly. So that's why you have to have this interface layer, which is etheric energy, or what's known as the etheric body, that allows them to do this. And the way it does this is by influencing matter at the quantum level. See, everything that is physical around us, if you zoom in on it far enough, you have these little tiny electrons, protons, you know, all these different subatomic particles that are popping in and out of existence and acting in really random ways. Well, etheric energy can influence the probability of whether subatomic particle does one thing or another. And that then can scale up to whether a neuron fires one way or another way, which then gives rise to thoughts and movement and speech and so on. So, you know, without the etheric body, the mind wouldn't be able to influence matter as much as it can.
Okay. Is that tied into like our third eye or our chakras, or is it the same thing as our spirit? Because I'm sure that a lot of the listeners are trying to figure out if the etheric energy is the same thing as our spirit or our chakras or our third eye. So what is the difference in those?
The way that I define spirit is that it's the core of our being, the thing from which your awareness comes from, your self-awareness, I should say, your thoughts and your free will. All of that, the very core of your being, that is what I call the spirit. And that's the thing that's completely outside of space-time and requires a couple more intermediate layers in order to be able to eventually influence the physical body and stay incarnated within it. As far as chakras go, they are energy vortices. They're located up and down our body, and each one is associated with a different color or a different pattern of etheric energy. So you might have, for instance, the very bottom chakra, the sacral chakra, connected with only one grade or one color or one level of etheric energy, which only has one function, okay? But then as you go up, each higher chakra connects with a higher, more refined and delicate form of etheric energy, which in turn has even more applications and functions and powers than the others. So you can kind of imagine the different chakras as the different colors of a rainbow, each of them interacting or pumping out or taking in, likewise, similarly colored layers of the etheric energy field around us and within us. Yeah, so the chakras, you know, they have the function mainly of penetrating through the different layers of our being, from our physical to our etheric, to what the occultists call the astral body. And all that is, it's an even more refined version of a subtle energy body. So it's like above the etheric energy body, but...
I'm sorry, the astral body is above the etheric body?
Yeah, according to the theosophists and also Rudolf Steiner and his Anthroposophy, the way that he divides it up, which actually matches what the ancient Egyptians came up with, the astral body is even above the etheric body, and it's the thing that's closest to the spirit. You know, so you got the spirit at the top, then you got the astral, then you have the etheric body, and then at the very bottom you have the physical body. And what the chakras do is they are interdimensional vortices that penetrate like skewers all the way from the bottom to the very top and tie them all together. It's kind of like string going up through multiple layers of clothing. You know, it kind of like ties it all together and allows them all to interact with one another.
Okay, it makes a little bit more sense now. Still learning, but it's coming together little by little, so.
Yeah, so etheric energy, one way to interpret it is that it's our life force energy. It keeps us alive because it keeps our minds in our bodies, allowing one to influence the other. But, you know, etheric energy is also a little more general than that. I mean, we're totally embedded in it. It's kind of like it's a substrate in which all of space-time, matter, and energy is embedded. It's kind of like the source code of reality, or kind of like the HTML code behind a website. You know, computer code, if you really go down to the very nitty-gritty of it, it's all ones and zeros. But the way it's all interpreted, it ends up becoming visual images on our LCD screens. Well, same thing with reality itself, where, you know, we look around us and we see objects and we see energy. But if you really were to go underneath it all you would have is a big underlayer of etheric energy. And part of that etheric energy, depending on how it's patterned and how much of it pokes up into our realm of perception, those parts then become what we know as physicality. But the parts of it that are more organized and clumped together and associated with living things, that's what I mean by life force energy. So, you know, we're embedded in this very basic level of etheric energy, but there's parts of it that are more sophisticated, being associated with life force. So, you know, etheric energy then is two things. It's both the source code of our existence, and it's also life force energy.
When I was reading the one website about etheric energy, about it being part of our life source and how we're all supposedly born with a certain level of this etheric energy, and certain things we do can diminish it rapidly, and it actually determines how long we're going to live, and once it's gone, then we just cease to exist.
If you are depleted completely of etheric energy, then you die. And even if it's weakened, you know, you age more rapidly, you become more susceptible to illness, and that's because etheric energy is life force energy. The stronger it is, the more it allows consciousness to reign over matter. Yeah, and the weaker it is, the more matter then in turn reigns over consciousness. Okay, like right now, in the average human, currently our etheric energy is rather dim. You know, we are like dim bulbs as far as the intensity of our etheric energy goes. So in other words, what it means is that we have only enough life force energy to barely keep us alive. And if we had more, then we would be able to overcome such things as aging or illness, pain, injury, and the limitations of the five physical senses. Now, if someone came along and dumped a lot of etheric energy into us, then we would be able to basically stop aging, overcome illness, and we would be able to see beyond the five physical senses, because etheric energy would amplify consciousness to such a degree that it would actually develop new psychic organs, allowing us to perceive things that currently we cannot.
So I guess the question I have is, we all know that we only function on about 8% of our brain capacity right now. And they say, I think Einstein functioned on 11% of his brain capacity. So if we educate ourselves and learn to function on more of our brain capacity, do we get more etheric energy, or do we have to have the etheric energy before we can evolve? I mean, and where would you get more etheric energy from? I guess if we knew that, then everybody would have it, right?
Right, right. And you know, actually, a lot of the Eastern mystical practices, yoga, meditation, and even in the West with certain Rosicrucian psychic training practices, they all aim to elevate and condition your etheric energy in order to get you to break out of the limitations that you have.
Because I've always, you know, understood the concept of meditating to relieve stress and to make your mind at peace, but I never looked at it in the way that you could actually get more of this etheric energy by meditating. And also, I think they said if you eat like real healthy, like you have to really eat organic food, you can't eat any of this processed food, it's actually killing our etheric energy.
Diet does play a role in it, but it's not enough. You basically would have to do nothing but drink, you know, multiple glasses of raw vegetable juice every day in order to get enough etheric energy to make a difference as far as aging goes. But of course, you know, if you eat nothing but dead and processed foods, what it's going to do, it's going to deplete your body's etheric energy a lot faster, and therefore you're going to age faster. There's a balance between environmental factors like chemicals that try to wear your body down, and that then is counterbalanced by your etheric energy field pulling your body in the other direction towards health and vitality. So depending on which one is stronger, you're going to get one or the other. Now, these Eastern practices that allow you to elevate and condition your etheric body, it's not just general meditation, you know? I mean, if you read instructions about transcendental meditation and follow that, it really wouldn't do too much for your etheric body, because these meditations are not designed to do that. They're only designed to still and train and discipline your mind. Nowadays, they're used more for stress relief than anything. But to actually use them to become psychic and so on, you have to kind of drill down into these different studies and get into the more esoteric aspects of it. Like, for instance, you know, in yoga, there's a bunch of different types of yoga. Well, there's also this one practice called Taoist yoga. And that's the one that's actually, that's one of the methods that aims towards elevating your etheric energy levels and getting you to become psychic and, you know, slow down aging and so on.
What does that one do differently?
Well, with that one, you're actually, well, the first thing you have to do is you have to enter this state of consciousness halfway between waking and sleeping. Now, what happens in sleep is that the moment you fall asleep, your etheric body loosens itself a little bit from your physical body and expands. So it's kind of like a flower blooming in the sunlight. When you are in a state that where your mind is still awake, but your body has fallen asleep, your etheric body has kind of expanded and become a little more activated. And once you're in that state, then you can use visualization, intention, to move your etheric energy around your body to different parts, not only raising it in amplitude, but also sending it towards parts of the body where normally it isn't too strong in. And when you do that, then what happens is certain circuitry within your etheric body that formerly were dormant or inactive, they get boosted up, they turn back on. So that's what these systems do. They get you to directly be able to feel etheric energy and move it around your body and amplify it, send it to all the right spots in order to turn these dormant circuits back on. You can kind of visualize it like in a science fiction movie where after a spaceship has crashed and its main systems are offline, right? And it's only on backup power, right? So if it's only on these backup life support systems, that's our current human condition right now. Our etheric energy levels are so low that we only have enough to stay alive and, just carry out our functions within this rat maze, that we call reality. But if we had more etheric energy, we would get these main systems back online, and, we'd be a lot more than just these rusting spaceships, going nowhere.
Why are we born with such little etheric energy? Why are we just naturally born with just so very little of it?
Yeah, well, we were born with more of it, of course, and it goes down over life. But a lot of it has to do with our genetics, and a lot of it also has to do with the fact that etheric energy levels on Earth have been quite low for thousands of years. So, it's kind of like a fish being born into really shallow water and being exposed to the air and the sunlight, it's going to dry out. Well, that's our condition right now. We are not surrounded by enough etheric energy to fuel us into naturally becoming as energized as we should be, and as we once were, many thousands of years ago. That's what this idea of the etheric tide, which is what I call it, is all about. The idea that etheric energy levels go up and down throughout history, and humans then respond to that and become more lit up or more etherically dim, depending on the environmental conditions. Now, one of the areas where this kind of ties into alien research is that aliens, compared to us, if we are like dim bulbs, I mean, they're like blazing spotlights, okay? I mean, they're just pumping out etheric energy like nothing. And if you're in the vicinity of that, a lot of that energy is going to bleed over into yours, and it's going to, through an induction effect, it's going to elevate your etheric energy just enough that you become a little more psychic in their presence. And that's one of the things then that facilitate telepathic communication with them. So we hear that in some contactee and abductee accounts, where either during abduction or even afterwards, your psychic abilities are enhanced compared to what they are normally. So, you're better at reading minds. And the only reason why that is because you were either activated or stimulated by the intense etheric energy fields of these aliens. Because, they're existing at a different level of reality where etheric energy there is a lot more intense than it is here. So, etherically, they're a lot more potent than we are. We're a lot closer to trees and animals and rocks than we are to aliens as far as our etheric energy levels are concerned.
Yeah, I definitely experienced a little bit of that with that one being that was in my house that one time, because he was glowing, and I never really thought of it as etheric energy, but I guess that's what it is.
Yeah, the thing is, etheric energy, if it's strong enough, it's going to impact your senses even if you're not all that psychic. Okay, so you'll be able to perceive an aura around them, for instance. So, a lot of these old medieval paintings with saints and stuff with a halo around their heads. Well, that was a visible emanation of their etheric bodies just because they were that beaming in terms of their etheric energy. And it shows it around the top of the head because it was associated with all the higher chakras, the third eye, the crown chakra. Although any of the other chakras, be it your heart chakra or navel chakra and so on, they also can become intense emitters of etheric energy corresponding to their type. Like I said, you can think of each chakra as a particular color, and the type of etheric energy it pumps out and takes in is of that corresponding color. So some chakras are more powerful than others, like the heart chakra is way more powerful than, you know, the sacral chakra. And the kind of etheric energy that the heart chakra pumps out and takes in, it's a lot more delicate and sophisticated than the other types. Meaning, it's kind of like crude oil, which is what our lower chakras would be putting out, versus jet fuel, which is what our heart chakra and our crown chakra would be using. So it's like a different grade of etheric energy. So, you know, that's why in Eastern practices, the heart chakra is one of the chakras that's associated with wish fulfillment. In other words, when it's activated, reality starts bending a lot more to your deepest desires and your thoughts and emotions than if it were not have activated, or if it were strictly your just your lower chakras that were activated. And that's because the kind of etheric energy that your heart chakra deals with, reality is a lot more responsive to that. Okay, so there's different types of etheric energy, and some can bend reality more than others, allowing the mind to influence matter a lot more than the others can. Like when we talk about aging or healing or illness and so on. Well, if your heart chakra is activated, you have enough energy in you to reverse aging or just, you know, heal disease just by the power of the kind of etheric energy that your heart chakra uses and puts out. And that's why love can often be such a powerful force in healing, not only yourself, but also others. Whereas people who have that part of themselves cut off and are only trying to use the lower chakras, they might not have as much success.
I'm really glad that we're talking about this, because it just really reinforces the thought of course there's higher beings that don't want us to evolve and have more etheric energy and want to keep us slaves to this system. And it's just really eye-opening to talk about this.
Yeah, and the reason why it's working is because, well, you can trace it all the way back to, for instance, the problem of who is it that people in general are electing into power, right? I mean, imagine if you were able to see the aura, or if you were able to even just sense intuitively what a person's all about. And imagine if everyone had that ability. How many of these corrupt politicians would be able to get into power? I mean, not a single one of them, because you would be able to see through it. And in fact, a lot of the people who end up becoming interested in these fringe studies in the alternative research community, they're ones who have enough intuition and discernment and perhaps just a little tinge of psychic power there, to know that appearances aren't real, you know, that not everything is as it seems. You know, so the fact that humanity in general is so deprived of energy, that's the main reason why we are in the situation that we are. Because people are in life support mode. They're just trying to survive. And they don't have enough to power higher intuitive abilities. They don't have enough to even get them through the day sometimes without resorting to some sort of escapism or numbing or self-medication or so on just to make it through. So, you know, like right now, we are pretty much at the rock bottom. We have been in rock bottom for hundreds of years as far as our degree of spiritual energy is concerned.
I'm kind of at a loss for words right now because I'm just taking it all in, like I said, but it's one of those things where it just makes perfect sense, because, I mean, if the average person stops and thinks about what they think about during the day, and it's really not much other than, oh God, am I going to be able to pay the rent this month? Or am I going to be able to, you know, put food on the table? And that's a sick way to live. I mean,
well, you know, what's bad about it is that even right now, people who are pretty well off, if they're cut off from intuition and higher abilities, all they really have to go on is the five senses and the material world and the rules of the matrix. So even if they aren't really concerned with day-to-day survival, they instead are, you know, preoccupied with material distractions, immersing themselves in mundanity. And if they have a soul, if they have a spirit, it doesn't take too long for them to start feeling rather empty about their life. You know, they have all the material goods that they want, but something is still missing. So, you know, it doesn't matter if you're rich or poor, if you don't have the core spiritual energy that you need to truly be alive, then you might as well be dead or pretty much digging your own grave in life.
Yeah, and you know, the system that we live in, the structured, what is supposed to be a, you know, democratic system or whatever, that the people are supposed to have the voice, and you know, we're supposed to be able to choose these leaders that are supposed to be speaking for us when in reality, that's not the way it is at all.
It's not just the elite, it's also the population. It's two parts of the equation, you know, one reinforcing the other. So even if you were to eliminate all of these elites, you would still have a population that would then put similar people back in power given enough time, just by virtue of their not being vigilant and not being aware. So, you know, the problem, all of it traces back fundamentally down to how conscious we are in life. And like I said, etheric energy is the key factor in determining how much energy consciousness has to overcome and override all these external challenges. Unless the fundamental conditions change within us, the same patterns are going to repeat on the mass scale. And that then brings me back to the ambient etheric energy levels on Earth and what would happen if they were to increase for whatever reason. Paranormal activity would increase quite a bit. And the reason that is, it's because etheric energy, if it increases in the environment, it would energize a lot of these beings like ghosts and demons who at the moment are relying on us for etheric energy to keep themselves alive. These entities would become more tangible, more powerful. Not to mention, you know, if it were to increase, our abilities to perceive them would also go up. So overall, you know, life would go from the old, everything is matter and energy and nothing more. It would go beyond that and take on a more supernatural overtone. You know, it would also blur the boundaries between dimensions and allow entities a much easier time to manifest here in our world. And, you know, already in the past, you know, you can kind of see this happening in very small ways. Every time you have a pretty big solar flare disruption to Earth's geomagnetic field, see that the sun pumps out not only electromagnetic radiation, but also etheric radiation. And anytime you have these huge outbursts directed towards Earth, the etheric energy levels on Earth begin to fluctuate just a little bit. And that causes paranormal activities to increase temporarily. Okay, so that's one of the effects. Another is that linear time would get a little bit screwy. Like, you'd have a lot more time glitches. You remember one thing, but you check on it, and then it turns out to be another. It's almost like you remembered an alternate past.
I've had things like that happen where it's kind of hard to explain. Yeah, it's like you think that something ended a certain way, and then you, like you just said, you go back and you check on it, and it's different or something like that. Yeah, I actually had that happen today. It was really strange. I thought I had placed a book on the shelf when I actually hadn't yet, and I swore I did, but it wasn't even like one of those, oh, well, I didn't do that. It was one of those, I swear I did it, I know I did it, and here it is. It's not on the shelf. It's really weird.
Time is another one of those natural phenomena that is heavily dependent on what the etheric energy source code of reality is telling it to do. So when the code changes, when etheric energy changes, time itself changes too. And, you know, it becomes kind of unglued, I guess you could say, and changes from a more like linear where you only have one memory of the past and you're only going one track into the future, becomes a little more fluid so that more glitches and weird phenomena begin happening like that. So, you know, not only would you have paranormal phenomena, but you would also have matrix glitches, you know, time anomalies and so on. The next one that you would have is reality becoming more responsive to thought. And the reason why that is because etheric energy influences matter in accordance with thought. And so the more etheric energy there is, the more matter responds to thought. And therefore, your thoughts and your emotions begin bending reality a lot more than they have previously. Now, if you're a paranoid person, that's a huge problem, right? Because now you're going to start attracting events and probabilities that begin verifying your paranoia more and more. Over the past couple of years, there's been a pretty large rise in what's known as the Truman Show type paranoia. You basically think that the world is being run by actors and that you're the center of the show, and that everyone can read your mind, and that reality is fake. Well, the reason why people start believing this is because they have synchronicities, and they have examples where, you know, it does seem like people are reading their minds. But really, it's more a case of people responding to the thoughts and emotions that these people are putting out. And it creates this feedback loop, you know, where the more paranoid you get, the more events you attract that confirm that paranoia. So if etheric energy levels on Earth were to increase, this feedback loop phenomenon would also amplify. And people who are deeply stuck in fear and paranoia, they would pretty much build, they would create their own hell from reality a lot more easily than they have in the past. But, you know, on the flip side, if you have healthier thoughts and feelings, it does the opposite, and allowing you to almost create a kind of mini heaven in your life if you can get yourself there, you know, mentally and emotionally.
Like a like you're the creator of like this elaborate game, like a video game. You're creating your own video game, and whatever you decide to do, whatever path you decide to take, it's almost like you're the creator of it. You know, like if a person starts thinking about, oh no, someone's going to break into my house, then they're going to attract all kinds of negative people that are going to want to come around and rob them. Or if like, if you're a positive person, you're thinking, oh, I'm going to meet a bunch of really nice people today, and I'm going to meet some new friends, and then you attract the positive people to you. Is it sort of like along that line?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's perfectly okay to be aware of problems like home invasions and so on, and to be physically prepared for it. However, it's all about where you put your obsession, your focus, your emotional center point. Okay. So there's a big difference between being aware of a problem, like being aware of a home invasion, versus having almost like a complex that seems to have a life of its own that you can't really get control of. Once it gets to that point where it takes on a life of its own, it literally does take on a life of its own externally in the form of these kinds of events that you fear, actually being probabilistically attracted. You know, you actually pull it in and give it life by virtue of your emotional focus. But if you're just calmly aware of it, then no problem. That's why I advocate everyone should be aware and be discerning and keep an eye out for the negative stuff, but do not become emotionally invested in it, because the emotions is one of those chakra things, you see. And let's say one of your lower chakras associated with emotions like fear, if you are dwelling in that energy a lot, then what happens is that that chakra actually resonates this etheric pattern out into the environment that then locks on to similar things out there in the probable future continuum, and, you know, through a process of resonance, attracts it in, okay? For the most part, it's emotions and subconscious root beliefs that are held very deeply. Those are the things that attract different types of situations. But awareness alone, no, no. Another effect that you would have is clairvoyant abilities. They would become activated. I mentioned earlier about Eastern practices and Rosicrucian practices helping you to become more psychic. Well, if etheric energy levels in the environment were to increase, you wouldn't have to go through as much trouble to activate and gather up your own etheric energy, because now there's plenty of it to go around. And therefore, it would be a lot more easy for people to become psychic, to gain levels of intuition and clairvoyance that they never had before. And, you know, if that were to happen, well, you'd be able to see ghosts, for instance. So these people that are supposed to be dead, you'd be able to see them, and hence you would get prophecies about the dead rising from the graves. It's not really that, it's more just being able to see these discarnate souls who just who became earthbound after death. Not everyone goes on to the spirit afterlife, necessarily. Some of them kind of get stuck here due to their attachments here. Or sometimes it's just their etheric body that gets cast off after death, and it kind of like wanders off and does its own thing, almost like an etheric zombie of sorts. And those things then end up becoming ghosts a lot of the times. And people can only see them if they're temporarily etherically activated due to, could be astrological reasons, or the phenomenon of poltergeist, you know, where young people, they're going through adolescence and put out a lot of this emotional energy. Well, that emotional energy is a form of etheric and astral energy, which then feeds some of these really weak paranormal entities that are around and makes them strong enough that they begin manifesting in the physical. And therefore they're able to, you know, pick up objects and throw them around. But if etheric energy levels were to go up, you would have these poltergeist-type phenomena increasing as well. Aside from that, you would also be able to see cloaked aliens, cloaked alien ships. That's most likely where these dreams about being able to see alien sky battles comes from. Because apparently, in our atmosphere, we have a lot of invisible aerial traffic going on. You know, ships flying all over the place. Just that normally we can't see it because our perceptions are limited only to the five physical senses.
Yeah, I was just going to say, my next question is, well, in addition to the aliens and ghosts, then would that also include, like, the demonic realm of, you know, the demons? Would we see a lot more, like, possessions and demonic things happening?
They would be more tangible than before. So whereas before you might only have a vague feeling that something might be around, if your clairvoyant abilities were activated, you'd be able to see them or hear them or, you know, sense them a lot more directly than before. If these beings become stronger, then yes, you would run into problems of possession, because they would have a lot easier time manipulating certain people and taking them over you know, if these people are weak. Perhaps, you know, that could be what's going on now. More people than ever getting possessed and driven into doing very inhuman things. So then, you know, that gets into the next point, which is that enhanced etheric energy levels would shift us into an altered state of awareness. And where we see that already, like I mentioned, was in the alien research field, where the intense etheric energy fields that aliens are pumping out causes an induction effect. What would happen is your mindset, your conscious awareness would actually expand and grow bigger, so that if you were to look back upon your former self an hour ago, your former self would seem like this really small shoebox, kind of constricted awareness. And any experience that you might have during the encounter, it becomes memories that later on become only accessible if you shift back into that expanded state of awareness. So in other words, if an alien comes around and your etheric energy levels go up and your mind expands, then all of a sudden you have access to memories that they weren't able to access earlier. In other words, memories of experiences that you had previously during the previous time when your mind expanded to that state. So, you know, what this means ultimately is that if on a global scale this sort of process were to happen, you would have people able to remember what they formerly weren't. Now here I'm talking about past lives. I'm talking about certain alien abduction experiences. And also things that were taught to a person during these experiences that were cached away in their subconscious or cached away in the parts of their being that are not accessible during a regular state of consciousness when, you know, you're back to your normal etheric energy states.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So in other words, I mean, let's say that, you know, a week from now, all of a sudden etheric energy levels on Earth would increase all of a sudden, and it activated you in some way. What would happen is all of a sudden, you would most likely be able to remember a lot of your abductions. You'd be able to remember things that right now you can't. So if we were shifted into this altered state of awareness, we would have dramatically heightened intuition. And one of the things that would then allow us to do is be able to see people for who they really are. And that's a very, very strategic thing that you can have if, for instance, you're in a post-breakdown situation and you have to network with others. If you're able to see into their core and tell that they're good people, then it would make networking really easy. I mean, you wouldn't have to worry about infiltrators or agent provocateurs or saboteurs. You can just know who's good and begin networking with them. So it's a great survival advantage if this ever were to come to pass. But I must say that as far as whom etheric energy would affect, I really don't believe that it would affect everyone at the same time or equally. It's very possible that it actually depends on your chakra conditions, on how much of this energy you could assimilate into yourself. I think depending on our different chakra imbalances, depending on that, I don't think everyone would become equally etherically activated. For instance, it all depends on what is the quality of this etheric energy that elevates. You know, is it a uniform color across the entire spectrum, or is it more the upper colors? Now, if it were the upper higher colors, then naturally it would follow that only the upper higher chakras would be able to tap into that. And therefore, people who are stuck in a very fearful mindset, you know, it might turn out to be that they don't really tap into that, so they would be missing out on a lot of these positive effects that such an etheric thing could have. If you become more intuitive, if you acquire clairvoyant abilities and are able to see ghosts and aliens and so on, that would force aliens to reveal themselves, because they can't anymore hide behind the dimensional veil and you know, pretend they're not there and manipulate things from behind the scenes. You know, once you can see them in the skies, that they're around, disclosure is automatic. We don't have to wait for government authorities to tell us that aliens are real. You'd be able to see it for yourself if this were to happen. But of course, it depends on how many people it affects and whether everyone comes etherically activated at the same time or not. If you go farther into the future and look at what would happen if increased etheric energy levels were to become the norm, technology would dramatically transform. Architecture would become sacred architecture. Chemistry would become alchemy. In addition to that, the old time things like magic and wizardry, which were common hundreds of years ago and going back thousands of years, they would make a comeback, except for in the form of a new science and in the form of new alien type technologies that we would have that make use of etheric energy. Currently, you know, we only make use of electric, magnetic, and other physical forces. But if you were to add etheric energy to that equation, all of a sudden you'd have a whole new range of technologies and ways of being that would make life quite interesting.
I don't know, that kind of reminded me a little bit. Do you think that there would be like wizardry schools that would open up, like Harry Potter, Hogwarts, or anything like that. And is that what that sort of magical stuff comes from? Is just etheric energy?
Well, you know, funny you mentioned that. I actually think Harry Potter is a it's a form of cultural programming, or, you know, what some would say, predictive programming. And trying to get kids right now to get used to the idea of having magical powers and being involved in these schools where such powers are enhanced, okay? So, you know, getting them prepped subconsciously for that, so that if it were to happen in the future through, let's say, you know, an etheric tide event, that, you know, they'd be more open to it. It's just kind of like softening up the collective consciousness to that idea. So, yeah, I mean, that would happen. It's happened in the past. I mean, ancient Egypt, they had the different priest schools where disciples were taught on how to perform really strange occult procedures that were a lot more powerful back then than they are today, only because back then, etheric energy levels were higher than they are right now. So be it alchemy or be it invocations of different entities, it would be a lot more easy to do if etheric energy levels in the environment were higher. So yes, that would make a comeback. Except for, you know, it wouldn't be called schools of wizardry in the future. It would be called probably something like, you know, school of extraterrestrial psionic enhancement or something. Because, you know, now we have a better understanding of what the stuff is really about, as opposed to the ancients who, you know, used more arcane terms. Now, more interestingly, another thing that higher etheric energy levels would do in the solar system is it would actually impact the way the sun and the core of the earth, and actually the core of the other planets, how they all behave. There was this study out of Stanford University by Professor Peter Sturck. He discovered that solar activity influences radioactive decay here on Earth. So, you know, you take a radioactive substance and you measure how quickly it decays and gives off radiation. Well, that radiation rate is somehow impacted by what's happening on the sun. And so what he was theorizing is that neutrinos, which are these little, almost, I mean, they are invisible subatomic particles from the sun, that are streaming through us by the trillions per second. If their density and their rate increases all of a sudden because the sun is getting more active, that somehow influences radioactive decay here on Earth, okay? So that's one piece of the puzzle. The next thing is Wilhelm Reich and his orgone energy, which I mentioned earlier. He discovered that orgone energy also affects the rate of radioactive decay. So there could be a possible link between orgone energy and these little neutrinos that are coming from the sun. Well, this French scientist named Louis Kervan, he linked neutrinos to alchemy, to alchemical transmutations of elements, like from lead to gold, or even from like things like calcium to some other element. Well, he studied how alchemy happens naturally within living beings, like be it plants or chickens or even humans. And he theorized that neutrinos were the key factor in allowing these magical alchemical transmutations to happen. So that's another piece in the puzzle. So all this means is that there's a link between neutrinos, etheric energy, and radioactive decay. Now, the reason why that is important is because 80% of the Earth's internal heat is due to radioactive decay. If the rate of radioactive decay in the Earth were to suddenly change, that would create almost like a thermal shock to the Earth's system. And a lot of that flow of the magma within the Earth, it would speed up or slow down depending on it. And that would result in this huge spike in volcanic seismic activity on Earth. So a lot of these prophecies and predictions, they've also included earthquakes and volcanoes as being one of the end times predictions, you know, having a rather large increase in those. And in fact, that's what we're seeing right now. Part of that might be due to etheric energy levels on Earth currently already starting to increase.
So what does cause the etheric tide?
There could be the etheric equivalent of like nebulas floating around that we pass through. Another is that the center of our galaxy actually is emanating these radial beams of etheric energy. And so then as we go around it, we get radiated by it periodically. There's also the possibility that it could be driven by supernovas. Supernovas pump out a huge, huge amount of neutrinos, which, as I mentioned earlier, are tied to etheric energy. It's possible that anything in its shockwave path would be irradiated by a rather large spike of etheric energy. The last possibility could be that our sun has a twin star that it orbits around, or that orbits around it, and that this twin star, due to what it's made of, it is surrounded by a rather intense etheric energy field. So then as we approach it, and as we get farther away from it during the orbit, it affects correspondingly the etheric energy levels on Earth. but I'm pretty sure it has a cosmic origin of some type. So with all these global cataclysms that are predicted, you know, with this change in consciousness, with this breakdown of linear time and human self-evolution and, you know, achieving a supernatural state of existence, how do aliens react to such a thing, right? And that pretty much explains the entire alien agenda. I mean, for instance, if they can't hide anymore, then they have to figure out a way to maintain control with us being aware that they even exist and then with us being able to see them. So that's the whole point of the disinformation campaign, to prepare us and make us ready to accept them when that point comes that we can finally see them and they can no longer hide. If they want to maintain their control permanently, then they would have to pretty much genetically modify us as soon as they can so that we become these psychic idiot savants, you know, without any spiritual connections. So they become these psychic slave workers who, despite the elevated etheric energy levels, we are still somehow psychically blinded from seeing certain parts of reality and seeing certain parts of the alien agenda. Because if you think about it, like even right now, we have Greys and other alien groups that, despite having very strong psychic powers, they're still spiritually dumb enough that they keep going along with, you know, the negative agenda of their supervisors. The aliens would have to try to get us to become more like themselves, more intelligent, more psychic, but at the same time, spiritually dumbed down. And I think that's where the whole genetic alien hybrid breeding program comes into play. Because if they can hybridize the human race with Greys, then we would become spiritually dumbed down. So I think that's how they will try to lock us down mentally and psychically and spiritually before we ever get the chance to grow our wings and flee the pen, so to speak. Yeah, but you know, there are positive aliens trying to counter all this, you know, to ensure that with this etheric tide, that we start off on the right foot and that we end up building a positive civilization. So the future really isn't locked into stone at the moment. Positive forces, you know, they work in a very sneaky, strategic, invisible kind of way. And those are the kinds of things that you might not necessarily know about based on the research. But the fact that we're still around, that we still have people like ourselves talking about these things, shows that there is enough protection that, you know, we might succeed in the future in undermining the negative alien agenda.
Gives us hope that the good guys are on our side.
Yeah. But, you know, there's a pretty big challenge because these negative alien factions, they're being pretty comprehensive in how they want to accomplish what they want to do. They're using all these different avenues to target a broad spectrum of people. Well, what is the disinfo that they're trying to push out specifically? It falls into one of two camps, okay? There's one camp which basically says that aliens are benevolent and they know what is best for us, that it's human nature and greed and paranoid leaders who have held us back, and that therefore we should hybridize with aliens and let them lead us, you know, to modify us so that we become better as beings and that we take the next step in evolution. You know, and that aliens are good, the human race is bad, and that we need them to survive in order to save the planet. So that's the one main core or one main camp of alien disinformation that's been out there for years now, ever since the 60s, really. But starting around, I'd say, 2009 or so, there was a new approach that started becoming activated. And this was almost like the polar opposite of that, which is that aliens are violent and hostile, and that they are a military threat to our existence, and that therefore we must unite behind our military and our black ops programs in order to fight off these invaders. The whole disinformation thing, it uses these two false dichotomies. And the reason why I call them a false dichotomy is because it's basically playing the idea of evil, violent aliens against the idea of peaceful, benevolent aliens. It's like a good cop and bad cop routine. In other words, here's the fallacy. The core fallacy is this. If aliens are evil, then they have to be violent. And if they are peaceful, then they have to be good. But that's totally false because you can have peaceful but hostile aliens who use a nonviolent form of deception and persuasion and mind programming in order to take over a planet without ever having to blow up a single building. So here's the funny thing, you know, up until about 2009, the message really was mostly that aliens are good. And we had people like Paul Hellyar, Edgar Mitchell, you know, Stephen Greer, Courtney Brown, Lizette Larkins, and these kinds of folks saying that aliens, for the most part, are good and that it's our government and our renegade military cabal that's trying to keep us from reaping the rewards of allying with the Greys or with, you know, whoever these aliens are. So that was a spiel about until about 2009. And then, like I said, early 2009, things changed. And all of a sudden, you had movies like The Fourth Kind, which, you know, portrayed the Greys in this really horrible, demonic sort of way. And you also had like people like Stephen Hawking and even Michio Kaku. I mean, these are big shot guys saying that aliens are a threat. So things shifted towards the idea of aliens being violent invaders, and that we pretty much need a new world order in conjunction with, you know, all the goods that Black Ops military can offer in terms of a really advanced defense in order to fight them off. But ultimately, these two camps, like I said, are playing off each other, and they're all part of the same deception. It's very likely that in the future, that the agenda could use some sort of patsy space terrorists to play the role of invaders, you know, just to justify some sort of a global martial law lockdown. They can definitely use some sort of a false flag alien invasion to do that. But here's the thing. After that's all done, and let's say after the world has united behind a single world government and a really advanced Black Ops type military to defend us against aliens, then it's very easy for positive seeming aliens to come in and chase off the hostile invaders. And then it would seem like, you know, we have to be grateful to these guys for doing it. And then we would just hand over our entire global police state infrastructure to them. And then, you know, once they take it over, then pretty much their alien takeover is complete. Now, if that were to happen, there's still the issue of genuine positive alien groups and how they would factor into all this. And most likely, you know, you would have these two false dichotomies, right? You would have the violent negative aliens, who are obviously hostile and negative. And then you would have the false positive types, who pretend to be our saviors, who come in and chase off the hostile ones and get us to willingly, you know, get under their thumbs or claws or whatever. But then there will be a third group, who is not a part of either of these two, who are actually genuinely benevolent, but they're not going to be the charming salesman snakes that these false positive ones are going to be. And, you know, they're not going to be as numerous. They're not going to be as well-known. They're pretty much going to be the underdogs. And if they show up, they will most likely try to expose the scam that's been going on. But the only problem is, I'm not sure that people are going to buy it. Because by that point, people might be desperate and programmed enough that they could see these genuine positive guys as a ploy by the negative groups to undermine the false positives. Kind of like in certain cults, there's always like this the scapegoat that's picked play the role of the devil, you know, the one trying to undermine the entire congregation. And people turn against that scapegoat and unify behind the cult leader. Well, these negative aliens, if they ever get a strong foothold here, they will most likely try to portray the genuine good aliens as being these demonic scapegoats trying to hold humanity back from an alliance with these false positives who are here to give us technology and genetic upgrades and everything that will in the end, unfortunately, lead to our spiritual and complete physical enslavement. So I don't know. I think even if the good guys were to show up in the end and would try to expose what's going on, I think there will still be lots of people who will fight for the negative alien control system until the bitter end. So I think it can get pretty messy once that happens.
Yeah, that's the problem, is finding out who it really is on our side and who's telling the truth and who's just deceiving us, trying to enslave us. It just seems like there's such a fight for power anymore that you can't trust the military, you can't trust the aliens. It's just gotten so out of control that you don't know who is on your side anymore.
Yeah, especially now with a lot of the disinformation having wormed its way into our different information sources. I mean, there are legit sources out there, but they're few and far between. You know, they're in the minority, as you know. And you have to beware that those with the bigger credentials and a salesman-like approach, who stubbornly ignore certain issues, those are the ones that tend to be the biggest mouthpieces for the alien disinformation agenda.
Yeah, definitely. That's why I'm like real cautious about going to like these conventions and hearing like the normal bigwigs speak at the conventions, because you just have to wonder, someone who's made a career out of going to conventions and giving lectures and writing books, you know, rather than actually doing field work and investigating the current cases, rather than a case they had investigated back in 1980-something, you know, I would feel more comfortable speaking with a researcher who was too busy to go to a lecture at a convention because they were actually out in the field, you know, people's houses, taking accounts from abductees and contactees and, you know, gathering the information.
I mean, the way you discover these agendas that they could be having is you look at what they're saying, and you think of the consequences, like the end results, of what would happen if you believed what they were saying and acted upon it. If you did that, whom would it ultimately serve, and whom would it harm? And, you know, see the direction that it all points towards, and that's how you can tell that something might be disinformation.
Yeah, it's really hard to find really good websites like yours because, you know, when you do a general alien abduction search, like Google search with keywords, you get the usual 5 to 10 mainstream websites. It's harder to find ones that don't pop up right away. So
it's a fight of the underdogs. And it tends to be the people that are either overlooked or, you know, drowned out by the others who are telling the truth.
Yeah, it seems like that, doesn't it? That there seems to be like the same five people like on all these shows. Like the, you know, I don't want to name names or anything, but like the Ancient Alien series, you know, you'll see those people on other shows. And it's just, you know, you have to wonder, like, there's got to be other, you know, researchers. And I don't really like to call anybody an expert. No one's an expert in this field, but you can have degrees or whatever in history or anthropology or whatever, but no one's really truly an expert in the field of ufology or extraterrestrials. All we can do is examine the history and culture and things like that. So there's plenty of people out there with who are just as educated as the ones that you see on TV all the time. So,
yeah, if you are these alien powers and you have the ability to mind program to nudge people telepathically, you know, without them knowing it, it's very easy to get only the people that you want on these major information and outlet sources, and to take the others and to demoralize them, to preoccupy them, just to get them to not ever be able to follow through in working their way into these positions. So, you know, you have certain people that are boosted in every way possible, and you have the other people that are being pressed downwards. And therefore, you know, we see who we see on a lot of these shows. So that, you know, you might only have less than, you know, 20% of the people on there actually being the good guys telling the truth. And then the other ones are there as an artificial chorus to drown them out.
Yeah, definitely. That's what it seems like to me.
Right. Someone who has the proper research that needs to get out there and needs to be told to people, you know, so they can be properly aware. I mean, that person is up against a pretty steep incline to be able to gain the same level of prominence as, you know, some of these disinformation agents. I mean, you have to wade through, like I said, mind programming. You have to wade through certain steered agents who are placed in your life sometimes to sabotage you if you're not careful. So, you know, you have to overcome a lot of these obstacles to ever make it, whereas others are pretty much given a free ride to be put in the spotlight.
And it seems like some of these individuals that are doing all of these lectures and going to the conventions, I find that some of them are really just trying to be famous. They're not really in the field of ufology or researching abductions for the right reasons. They're in the field because they believe that it's going to get them famous and that they're going to, you know, make a breakthrough that nobody else ever made. And they're going to have like the best footage, UFO footage of anybody else, or best abduction experience. And then when they find out that when you're in this field, no one is really truly famous in this field. There's just very well-known cases. Then you'll see them trickle into other avenues of trying to find a way to get themselves back in the media spotlight and, you know, attain that level of fame.
For me personally, I don't find them to be too much of a problem, just because what they're saying, it's more ego aggrandizement. It doesn't really say anything new. But the ones I'm concerned about are the ones who have evidence, who are very well-spoken, but who are speaking a very dangerous lie as far as the nature of the alien presence goes. They're the ones who are, you know, pretty well positioned opinion leaders, able to steer public perception on the alien matter.
Yeah, and it doesn't even have to be anybody that isn't making any money off of it to establish their credibility. It could be somebody who has, like you stated before, people with titles behind their name, doctor, you know, so-and-so, who went to Yale or whoever, that, well, he must be telling the truth because he's educated. And that's not true at all, because there's plenty of liars that are well-educated people, so.
Yeah, it just makes you a more sophisticated liar, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so given all this, what do negative aliens really want for our near-term future? Well, they can't disclose their existence in our current state because, you know, right now we're still too free. We're still too well off. A lot of us are way too jaded to even care. So, you know, right now we can still think, we can still research, we can still consider and reconsider, you know, to organize and reject any of these ideas. And that's a problem. I mean, under this current state that we have right now, there's no way that aliens can show up and reveal their existence. It just wouldn't work. So what would they have to do in order to succeed? Like, what would be their ideal scenario? It would be the following. First of all, they would have to cut us off from information. So most likely, before they reveal themselves or before we can fully see them on a mass scale, they will have to take down the internet and put in its place more of a one-way direction of information, like a one-way information stream. Something like an emergency broadcasting system, you know, where the internet's down, maybe even phones are down, and all you have is an emergency broadcast from a centralized source going into everyone's homes so that everyone is watching it, and there's no way for people to communicate with each other and debate and discuss this. So internet going down, that's pretty likely. Number two, they would need to keep us from mobilizing and organizing, to restrict free travel and to restrict public assembly. Because then, you know, it's very easy to keep people divided. And if they're unable to organize, then you can run a dragnet and deal with people one by one, which is a lot easier than dealing with an entire army, for instance. Beyond that, you would have to make them confused and disoriented so that their judgment is off and so that they are more suggestible. When people are confused and disoriented, they whirl around themselves trying to grasp onto anything, onto anyone that gives them answers, give them some sort of certainty. Once you do that to people, then you can feed them any lie that you want. And if it makes a little bit of sense, you know, even if it's not correct at all, people will latch onto it, unfortunately. Confusion, that's easy enough to do if people's old belief systems have been wrecked by the fact that all of a sudden aliens are known to exist. And you can also make people desperate, cut off their food, their fuel, their water. Then you can gain compliance through giving them assistance with the strings attached. And that's pretty easy if the global economy no longer exists, if there's been some sort of a disaster or global economic collapse that has really put a dent into food, fuel, and energy infrastructure. So if people are confused and disoriented and they're desperate, now they're very easy to manipulate. Once you have their attention, then the next thing you would have to do is make people angry and shameful about themselves and embarrassed about the old human power structure. This way, people are nudged into finishing taking down any remnants of the old power structure and accepting any new one that they're given. So that's the one way that aliens can replace current human corrupt leadership with their own alien stooges. You know, I'm talking here about human-alien hybrids who currently are within our population, talking about certain contactees and abductees, and also some of the disinformation mouthpieces mentioned earlier, who right now they're slowly rising in prominence as far as the whole alien agenda is concerned. But at a future time, if things ever break down and the old leadership is gone, then these guys altogether are going to be pushed into becoming the new power structure. The end result of that would be a new power structure where aliens have a lot more control than they do now. These are the methods that they would have to use in order to gain full control over us. And actually, these are exactly the same tactics that have been used by cults and military brainwashing camps. I mean, they get a person, right? They put them in an isolation cell, cut them off from other people, feed them false information, keep those prisoners from communicating with each other, confuse and disorient them with lights and really bad living conditions. And, you know, cutting off their food and shelter and so on to make them desperate. And eventually making them shameful about their old identity so that they break down and assume their new identity. So these are the things used by cults and brainwashing camps that can be applied on a massive global scale very easily by the alien agenda. And in fact, I think that's where all of it could be going. The only thing that they would need then is an excuse to, you know, shut down the internet to reduce food, fuel, and, you know, this could be anything from some sort of an EMP event, like a electromagnetic pulse event that fries out electronics and causes our infrastructure to collapse. It could be cyber warfare on a mass scale, or, you know, it could be some sort of, like, limited nuclear conflict. But regardless of the reason, I think we have negative alien factions working with Black Ops, with their mind-controlled sleeper army embedded in our population, ready to make this happen. Now, this would only happen under the assumption that they are the only ones calling the shots. Like I said, there are surprise factors having to do with divine intervention and positive forces who might upset this plan. You know, the future is open, but regardless of what source you go to, It all seems like drastic change in life is on the horizon. Despite all of that, there's still some good news. Like I said, positive aliens, they also have their information vectors. Not disinformation vectors, but information vectors. Here, you know, as researchers, as certain experiencers out there trying to put out the truth, make people aware of the different alien deception tactics and what they're really about. You know, also the difference between genuine positive aliens and false positives or the obvious negative types. They're trying to counter this every step of the way, but they are the underdogs, and they don't have all the big, obvious information channels out there. You know, it's not like they control the media, but what they do have is the smarts, the strategy, and they have a bit of divine guidance on their side. So their moves can have these butterfly effect consequences that really do some major damage to undercut the negative alien agenda in the end. Divine intervention, it works in surprising ways. It doesn't usually work in ways that we can predict. In fact, if we try to expect and predict exactly how, when, and where it's going to happen, you can be pretty much guaranteed that that's not how, when, and where it's going to happen. But therefore, you know, it's a matter of faith. Because unlike all the trends that you see in the news, you know, where you can have scientific reports about what's going to happen, you can, you know, analyzing data charts about temperature rising and so on, divine intervention isn't anything like that. It's more something acting from outside of time, you know, even something working from the future. And it's nothing that we can predict based on past trends and past data, with the exception of one thing, which is that in your own life, you know, you've probably had near-death encounters. You might have had even like difficult situations that in weird ways, improbable ways, things came through for you in the end. It's almost like an invisible hand, personal divine intervention in your own life, seeing you through, even if it was only at the very last second. That's an example of positive forces in our own lives acting when it counts most. It's a matter of faith based in experience. If it's worked 99 times so far, will it work the 100th time? Well, a person who has zero faith will say, well, I don't know, probably not. You know, just because I've had it all my life doesn't mean I'll have it next. And that's if you have no faith. But if you have faith, which is that, yes, you know, it's happened before, there is something there, and it will be watched out for, then I think that's a legitimate form of faith. You know, I mean, there's blind faith where, like in certain religions, you know, we have to have faith in what the authorities say. That's blind faith. That's not faith based in experience at all. That's faith based in dogma. And I don't believe that we need that necessarily. What we do need is faith based in experience of all the anomalous things that we've had so far, with the intention that whatever laws, whatever beings, whatever principles were responsible for them, they're still valid. And we can still count on them in the future if we do our own part by staying aware and being responsible. So another good thing that we can look forward to is that if there is some sort of an etheric tide, that if our psychic abilities were to activate, I mean, that would give us a huge upper hand. I mean, it would be a huge tactical advantage. For instance, if we had precognition, if we're able to see auras, if we were able to see cloaked beings, or if we had some sort of a Gnostic insight about what's happening to us, if we had even just a little bit of this, can you imagine the upper hand that we would have as far as like evading capture, as far as like networking with people, seeing who's who, knowing what to do? It doesn't really take too much to give us a pretty good advantage in a situation where otherwise it seems like we're totally out of luck.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what you were just talking about with the divine intervention, and this applies to everybody. You don't have to be like a certain religion or have been raised a certain way. I think every person can say that inside, well, most people can say that inside themselves, they've had that divine inner voice that has, like you just said, showed up at when we needed it the most. And typically is going to show up at the very last minute, just before you feel certain doom is inevitable. And I truly believe that there is divine intervention, and I do believe in angels, and I believe in demons, unfortunately, and I do believe that you know, that the higher power does know a million other alternative ways to get out of a situation, and we only know three. And
yeah, you just have to look carefully at your own life, the little anomalies where something was there guiding you, and you can tell from that as a form of personal proof that something positive is there. And if it was there, then very likely it will be there in the future, regardless.
You know, people expect to see angels all the time, and they expect to see a blinding flash of white light whenever a miracle happens. And a lot of people don't realize that they have miracles every day and divine intervention every day, and they just they don't see it maybe right away. And not that angels don't appear or exist, it's just that that's not the way most miracles work. It's just like we just talked about, it's that, oh my gosh, how I'm going to die, I'm not going to be able to get out of this situation, and there's no way out. And then all of a sudden, you thought that you've exhausted all your options, and there's that one you didn't think of that came through. And where did that come from, you know?
Mm-hmm. Since you mentioned the religious viewpoint, in the Bible, you know, there's a mention of the kingdom of heaven, which is this divine realm that is all around us and within us, but we're spiritually blind to it. And if we adopt the right spiritual approach, we can actually connect with it and live within it and start manifesting it more and more around us. Well, this idea, you also find it in other religions and also a lot of metaphysical studies, but it has to do with the idea that there's a better reality around us that we can transition onto if we resonate with it. And by resonate, what I mean is adopt an etheric pattern that is similar to the one that's natively there. So if you resonate with this better reality, then in the future, it's possible, our very timeline, our reality could split between a negative timeline and this other positive timeline. Some people say that this positive timeline already exists in parallel to us, that this better reality is already here, and that, you know, we just have to change ourselves internally, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and also through our actions in order to get there. But the fact that aliens, we can see them appear and disappear, so they're going back to something, so we know that there's alternate realities. So it stands to reason that if they can do it, perhaps we can as well. And perhaps there is something other than just this world that we're in right now, you know, which appears to be going down in flames. If that were to happen, then actually the situation would be a lot like The Matrix, or like the movie like The Island or Logan's Run, where you have this small group of people who are like pioneers who make it out of the old Matrix control system out into this new reality and become empowered there and become transformed as the old reality is breaking down. They actually come back and help liberate the rest of the people. I think it's possible. I think it's very likely, in fact. And it's one of the few things that can counter a lot of the pessimism and doom that we find out there right now concerning our own world. And not to advocate escapism and to say that you know, we shouldn't care about what's happening here because, you know, we're all just going to flee to a better reality. But if this world here does become unsalvageable, then there still remains a glimmer of hope that maybe there is something better that we can transition onto. And aside from that, of course, there's the idea that certain aliens will rescue us, which is a problem, you know, because you don't know, you know, if aliens show up saying, hey, you're about to get annihilated by, I don't know, a solar flare or tsunami or something, and you want to come with us? You know, well, we'll save you. Question is, would you go with them or would you not? Because you don't know what's on the other side of that door or the other side of that portal, you know. For all we know, it could be an alien sausage factory, right? It could be a big shoot down into a meat grinder if you don't know what you're doing.
That is a really tough question because, you know, the state of our planet right now is they're pushing for the new world order. They're pushing for the one economic system, the one rule of law. And I don't know. Sometimes I just feel like that all, you know, the good guys have just abandoned us and have just said, well, we can't save them. We'll just, you know, do what we can to comfort them through the situation. And you know, what can we do? What can we do to save ourselves? It just, like you said, it just seems like there's just, no one cares. There's so much apathy. There's so much apathy. FEMA camps are ready to go. We know that. We've seen, they got the fences up with the barbed wire. They've got the plastic coffins, the cheap ones that you just throw into the ground and you could just pile them on top of each other. And everybody's just walking around like zombies, like, you know, nothing's going wrong, everything's fine, and we'll just keep going to work every day and paying our bills, and it's madness. Everything is just madness anymore. It's like you said, they're all going down in flames, and we are.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, you know, Einstein said that the solution to a problem cannot come from the same level where the problem originated. And we know that the problem that we're facing now originated, ultimately, with human ignorance. The fact that too many people cannot see through the deception that others have put up. And therefore, these other psychopaths have been able to worm their way into power and take things over and help each other and drive the whole system down into the ground. So if that's where the problem came from, then the solution has to be outside that. Therefore, one way or another, we would need, be it the etheric tide activation, where we gain back some of our faculties, our psychic abilities, our superhuman powers. Because, you know, and really, to get through this challenge, to get through these seemingly insurmountable odds, you know, we have to have an equal and opposite level of asymmetric advantage over it. And that would be done through a combination of, like I said, divine intervention, increased mental powers, and also help from any positive aliens.
Yeah, this is a whole other subject for another show, but it just, you know, when you look at the big picture of this new world order that they're trying to push for, it goes back, geez, pre-World War I. I mean, it's just like we're fighting this fight constantly, and it just, like you just said, it's like, you know, the corporations and the bankers and the politicians, they're all friends. They're all looking out for each other, and there's this false reality that we have any say at all in what they do. And well, we can protest, we can get petitions going, but I mean, look at all these things that just got passed in Congress that are really unconstitutional, and it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, indefinite detention, and it's so much. I can't believe that it got this bad. So, you know, you're right. We do have to find a way out of it. We do have to evolve, or I mean, what is really the solution without having to have a whole army of aliens or angels come here for our salvation? What can we do to save ourselves, you know?
The solutions will not be found within the 3D control system. All the methods that the system has set up for us to change things, I mean, we already see that it's breaking down. The voting system, the whole legislative process, you know, while it's still important in the sense that, you know, if that falls, then that's like the first domino that knocks everything else down. So if you can stop it there, then sure, that's good. But if anyone believes that just social activism, that just resistance, you know, be it physical, violent, or nonviolent, you know, in the way that it's been done for the past couple thousand years, if anyone thinks that that's enough to solve this problem that we're facing now, they're mistaken. Because we need more than that. We need something supernatural, superhuman. We need a total internal paradigm shift to tackle this. And I don't think it's a matter of hoping that it'll happen. I think it's a matter of universal divine necessity that it will and must happen. I mean, that it will happen because it must. The direness of the situation is what brings about the necessity for these previously unimaginable assets, you know, these powers to evolve.
Yeah, hopefully maybe we can, like you said, go into a different realm or a different dimension where the people don't try to enslave each other, and these negative people that are in our government right now, the politicians and all the leaders, they can just stay here and enslave each other, and we can just go off to a better place. And
yeah, I mean, that would be the ideal thing if it were possible, and it very well could be. But we can't 100% rely on it. You know, obviously, we do have to do our best to salvage the situation. But if it ever becomes unsalvageable, then yes, that option remains.
I think we talked about a really important subject tonight. I'm glad that you chose this for us to discuss. So hopefully it helped open a lot of people's eyes and got some good conversation going, and something we could definitely elaborate on in the future. Just want to thank all of our listeners that tuned into the show tonight. And as always, stay tuned for our next show. We have plenty of interesting and important topics to discuss. So thanks for listening in, everybody, and have a great night.